Why don't you grab your seats? We have quite a few bills yet today, and we do not have a quorum yet, but we will get the meeting started so we can hear these bills. And first up on the agenda is Representative Dabney and House File 610. Representative Dabney. We will, when we get a majority here, a quorum, we will move your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. Please proceed.
Mr. Chair, first let me thank you and staff for being so kind and accommodating my schedule today. I've got another bill up in another committee in the same time frame, so I appreciate the efforts. Mr. Chair and members, House File 610 was brought to me by my constituent who is sitting here with me now with a simple frustration, having to get a new license tab for his trailer that is parked on his land, not going anywhere, every year. It's an $18 fee. It's a small fee to the state, but a big frustration and inconvenience to him. While House File 610 makes some technical changes to the statute, the real proposal is on lines 1.5 to 1.20, where we extend the licensure period from 1 year to 3 years and increase the fees accordingly. This simplifies things for Minnesotans. It's as simple as that. With that, Mr. Chair, I'd like to introduce Mr. Keith Olson.
Thank you, Representative. And if you could, please state your name for the record.
Keith Olson from Minneapolis.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I'm just trying to make it easier. Time is money. I want to license my trailers like I like my boat every 3 years. We can stop sending out these renewals every year, send them once every 3 years. I'd rather just pay for 3 years up front and my $18, give me three times that and be done once. And instead of every year doing this, keep it simple.
Okay. Any questions from the committee? Are there any others from the audience who would like to testify for or with concerns with this bill? We have one gentleman coming forward here. Please state your name for the record, please, and continue with your...
Thank you.
Concerns.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. For the record, my name is Jim Hurst on behalf of the Minnesota Deputy Registrars Association. I am not Jeremy Hurst, as was posted in the agenda. That happens to be a cousin of mine, and I don't think he's qualified to be here today.
Thank you for the clarification.
Thank you.
We don't know what Jeremy
is. In brief, committee members, while I certainly understand the individual for desiring to perhaps move to a three-year registration cycle, and the bill does reflect a move to from the state's perspective of collecting the required registration taxes by basically tripling them in response to that. The one thing that is not reflective in this is the fact that these transactions also carry what is called a filing fee. And the filing fee is what deputy registrars depend upon to keep their offices open. Deputy registrars, there's 175 of them total in the state. They are set up to be self-sufficient. We are not subsidized in any way by the state of Minnesota, but we act as agents on behalf of the state to collect the registration fees and taxes and forward them onto the state on a daily basis. Basically, what would happen under this legislation would be to eliminate the filing fee that we realize on an annual basis. And that translates into a loss of just over $1 million in the second and third year that this would impact. And of that, roughly 80% of that would be within the deputy registrars. I have to acknowledge the fact that the state does do some of these transactions directly, and that's roughly about 80%. So. Over the past few years, deputies have come before this committee and legislators to advocate for for incremental filing fee increases. We have been very pleased with the legislators' response, and over time we have maintained that self-sufficiency. However, with this and the budget gap that it would cause to our offices, we have no other choice but to oppose moving in this direction unless our filing fees were appropriately addressed simultaneously at the same time. And in conclusion, just a little bit of background history. About 15 years ago, Governor Ventura at the time proceeded to realize what are now lifetime registration on utility trailers. At that time, the deputy registrars realized filing fees on a biennial basis. Those were on a two-year cycle. Those are now long gone, and it did take us many years to recover from that loss of revenue. So I will conclude my remarks with that and sit for questions if anyone so chooses at this time. Thank you.
Before we get to questions, we do now have a quorum. So with that, I officially call the meeting to order and ask if somebody has read the minutes of March 9th and would be willing to approve them.
So moved.
Mr. Nash, Representative Nash, thank you. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion prevails. Then I will also move the House File 610 be heard and laid over for possible inclusion at the end of this testimony. Are there any questions of any of the testifiers or of Representative? Yes, Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So it's actually in response to the concern about the filing fees. It seems to me if you're only filing once every 3 years that there will be a decrease in business, just as there should have been on the other issue, that you could shorten your staff, shorten your hours, something in response to that rather than just opposing the bill.
Mr. Hurst?
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Norton. There are a total of 170,000 registered trailers in this category. I can't specifically say that they are equally split amongst all 175 offices. And in general, it would be difficult to respond accordingly. Our employees that we have are very well trained. We don't like to lay individuals off because of the time and resources that we put into proper training for them. Certainly, yes, you could look at eliminating staff in this situation, but they're valuable staff, and we would prefer not to go in that direction.
Mr. Chair, could I ask a follow-up?
I'm sorry, Ms. Representative Norton.
Thank you. So I understand that nobody likes laying off staff. I was just trying to find another way rather than opposing, you know, what seems to me a common sense kind of move here. Is there a way, and perhaps this goes to Representative Davney, for people to, for instance, when I get my car license, I have a choice of mailing it in or going to the office. Is that choice available for trailers as well?
I'm looking at Mr. Olson. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. My apologies. Mr. Olson and Mr. Hurst, and they're both nodding yes.
If in light of the discussion, there is always the possibility, and I'm not necessarily suggesting this because I personally would like to see if the revisor's office, the registrar's office. You could be a revisor, maybe. I'd like to see them try to handle this within their means and see if it would work. But if it doesn't, there's always the electronic methodology that we could ask folks wanting the three-year license to apply electronically if we needed to.
Representative Davney or other testifiers?
Mr. Chair, Representative Norton, you're thinking creatively, and I appreciate that. I appreciate Mr. Hurst's client's problems in regard to this. He was also good enough to approach me several days ago about with his concerns. This strikes me as a problem to be solved, not an impediment to the bill. No one likes paying higher fees, but then again, nobody likes having to go each and every year to get a sticker for your trailer when you can do your boat trailer every 3 years. And I think most Minnesotans could find some way to be happy with the reduction in the imposition and the inconvenience if there was a slight increase in fee or other approach to this.
Representative Norton?
No.
All right, thank you. We have three more questions on the list, and I just want to remind everybody that we do have quite a few more bills to go through. I have Representative Howell, Representative Renbeck, and Representative Mason. So, Representative Howell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My only question is to the effective date, and I just want to make sure that if you could clarify, it says after final enactment, but then it says it applies to those after January 1, 2016. Exactly when does it come in effect, and are the stickers all for a three-year period going to be prepared and ready to go by the time that the enactment does occur, whichever that time is?
Representative Daphne.
Mr. Chair, I'll have to ask staff to speak to particularly the first of Representative Howe's questions. The second, I think, goes to the department.
Mr. Chair and members, the effective date does have two pieces to it, so that the provision would go into effect right away, so that the new requirement would be established. But there's an application clause as well, so that it would only apply for registrations for these trailers where the registration period begins on January 1st, 2016, or begins at some point after that. That essentially has two effects. One is to provide some time to the department to implement the changes in their systems and procedures to impose the tax at this alternative rate. The second is to prevent a registration by someone of the trailer ahead of time to avoid what the new tax would be, so that somebody who's registering their trailer for a multiple future years wouldn't be able to register it against the current tax rate. They would, if they're registering mm-hmm. for a 2016 January 1 or later, would register and pay at the tax rate that's being established in the bill.
Representative Hall. Representative Renbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I do like to agree with our DFL counterparts when I can, and so I wanted to echo what Representative Norton had to say. But it strikes me that to say that there isn't any cost to the state, sir, I think, you know, when you're kind of implying maybe a guaranteed income in a sense, and so that probably is a cost to taxpayers and to the state. So it was just a comment. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and whoever would like to answer this. How do you go about registering your boat for 3 years?
Ms. Rolston,
either one of the boat owners?
Thank you, Chairman.
Go ahead.
Same way. We do it once every 3 years.
Oh, at the same
Representative Mason?
Yes. Yes.
So we have precedent.
Yes.
Representative Mason, do you have a follow-up?
No, I just wanted to know, like, if we're doing it already, I was concerned about sometimes it's real difficult to do things, like maybe if we're doing everything 1 year to switch to a 3 year, but if we already have the precedent, it would seem to me that would be possible.
Mr. Chairman,
go
if
ahead,
I may.
Mr. Mason.
Specific to boats, for instance, you are correct. That is on a three-year schedule. However, boats are registered within the Department of Public Safety for use on waterways, of course, similar to snowmobiles on snowmobile trails. However, recreational vehicles ply the state's highways and roads, and as such, they come under the regulation within the Department of Public Safety and the Division of Vehicle Services. So that's why there's a difference here in that recreational trailers, since they ply the roads, come under Public Safety and Driver and Vehicle Services, whereas DNR vehicles is with the Department of Natural Resources.
Representative Mason, any follow-up?
No, thank you.
Any other questions from the committee? Are there any other testifiers from the audience? Hearing none, then I renew my motion to lay this bill over for possible inclusion in the bill, or omnibus bill.
Thank you,
Representative
Davin, Chair and members.
Coming. Appreciate
the time and consideration.
Yep. We do have two bills from Representative Sanders on the docket, but I know he has conflicts with other things, so we'll get to them as he arrives. So with that, Representative Hancock, we'll take your bill up next. Thank you, Representative Hancock. I move House File 901 to be included, possible inclusion into the omnibus bill. And with that, Representative Hancock, please address your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Representative Dave Hancock, I'm speaking, members, I'm speaking at the request of Lake of the Woods on this bill. What it does is it authorizes $36,000 appropriation from fiscal year 2016 for the General Fund Commissioner Transportation for a weather transmitter in Lake of the Woods County. It's a one-time appropriation. And I was made aware of this from a letter from Lake of the Woods County that the they were advised by MnDOT that the transmitter on Roosevelt Tower is over 20 years old and is in no longer repairable, and that the manufacturer's warranty and participation in that process is no longer there, and they're worried that it will fail soon. Cell phone reception is minimal on Lake of the Woods, and for public safety and for just upcoming weather conditions, they want to make sure that the public safety is taken care of and that this transmitter is replaced. It sounds like the funding sources were not able to be found any place other than the general fund here, and so I'm requesting that that goes to MnDOT and the Office of Statewide Radio Communications to purchase and install this new transmitter.
Thank you, Representative Hancock. Are there any questions from the committee? Is there anyone from the audience that would love to testify either for or with concerns on this bill? If not, then I renew my motion that this be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus transportation bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Representative Nash, I think you are up next, sir. And is there a preference as to which one you take up first?
We're going to talk about motorcycles.
All right. That is House File 533. And Representative Nash, do you have a motion for us?
I'd like to move House File 553 for possible inclusion.
Go ahead with your bill, sir.
Mr. Chair, members, appreciate the opportunity to present this bill to you. This is the essentially the Start Seeing Motorcycles license plate. It is, as you see before you, and in your packets, you've got a copy of what the artist renders as a possible license plate. It would create a fund over and above what would normally be collected from a license plate to go towards safety efforts, volunteer to be paid for by those that are buying these license plates. I appreciate the support from many of you in the committee that have already signed on to this bill and have told me privately that you're behind this. I think it's a very good idea, and I've got my friend Mike Berger, constituent as well, longtime friend, who is with Abate. I'm sure many of you are familiar with Abate, so I'm going to ask him to testify in just a second. But this does have a fiscal note, and Mr. Lee, if you wouldn't mind regaling us with what the fiscal note does.
Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chair and members, the fiscal note prepared by the Department of Public Safety notes that there will be a $4,000 savings net in fiscal 16 and $7,000 savings net in fiscal 17, bringing the biennial total to $11,000. For any other questions, I would recommend questions be directed at the fiscal note to the Department of Public Safety.
Thank you, Mr. Lee. And Representative Nash, just a quick question for you.
Sure.
Is this for both cars and motorcycles, or is this just for one or the other?
Chair, members, it would be the preference of ABATE that it be available for both cars and motorcycles, and I've gotten many emails to the effect, at my request, Mr. Berger sent out emails asking people to email me to let me know that they are in favor, and to date I've gotten just under 100 different emails saying that they would be more than happy to put license plates on both their motorcycles and their automobiles in order to facilitate this.
Thank you.
And Mr. Berger?
Mr. Berger, would you please state your name for the record, please?
Michael Berger from ABATE of Minnesota.
Go ahead with your testimony.
Mr. Chairman and esteemed committee members, my name is Michael Berger, and I am here to testify on behalf of HF 533 Start Seeing Motorcycles license plate. As the past chairman of the state of Minnesota's Motorcycle Safety Advisory Committee, a member of American Bikers for Awareness, Training, and Education, and an avid Minnesota motorcyclist, I know firsthand the importance of motorcycle safety through proper training and awareness programs. This bill would help fund those vital programs through revenue generated by motorcyclists for motorcyclists, revenue that would reside in the state's Motorcycle Safety Fund, where it would be used by the Department of Public Safety to actively provide motorcycle training, safety, and awareness programs. The Motorcycle Safety Fund does more than simply train new riders on safe operation of a motorcycle. It also provides advanced training for experienced riders, training for returning riders, awareness programs aimed at motorists, awareness programs within schools and driver education programs, public awareness campaigns through television, radio, and print advertising, maintenance of the fleet of training motorcycles that the state of Minnesota maintains for these courses, funding for Dial-A-Ride to reduce alcohol-related motorcycle crashes, and many other awareness programs. Safe motorcycling goes far beyond safe operation of a motorcycle. It often rests in the hands and eyes of a motorist. And I know all too well what happens when a motorist does not see a motorcycle. In 2011, my wife was almost killed on her motorcycle by a driver who did not see her. And it was her advanced rider training that saved her life. This bill, HF 533, would help reduce crashes such as hers, as well as injuries and fatalities, through the programs these special plates would help fund. According to the DPS, there are more than 400,000 licensed motorcyclists in the state of Minnesota, and more than 350,000 registered motorcycles. If only 10% of those licensed motorcyclists purchased just one plate, it would result in more than $400,000 being raised for motorcycle safety programs. Just last year, there was a 25% drop in motorcycle fatalities from the year before. Imagine how much more we could do with these extra safety funds. We motorcyclists aren't asking for you to help us. We're asking for you to allow us to help ourselves by funding a way that we, the motorcyclists of Minnesota, can make our roads safer for everyone. Thank you for allowing me to speak today, and I hope you will vote favorably on this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Berger. Are there any questions? Representative Uglum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I'd just like to voice my support for this, too. I'm an avid motorcyclist, put on a lot of miles every year on motorcycling. And in today's world, and I know Representative Koznick is the same way, in today's world, the motorcycles are much more powerful, much more sophisticated than they were in the 60s, 70s, and 80s even. And there are so many older people that are riding motorcycles now. And then the younger kids with the ninja bikes that go really very fast. And we need this motorcycle training. It is proven that it works. And the more that we can do to reduce fatalities, and I think the reduction in fatalities is really directly resulting in the training that goes on. And for someone that starts out nowadays in motorcycling, not to have this training, to just go buy a bike, take their test, get their license. For people that don't take the training, they are at a distinct disadvantage on the road today. So I think this is a wonderful program. Thank you.
Thank you. Chair Hornstein.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Mr. Berger. And I also appreciate your interest in our legislation, which I think we're going to have Thursday night on increasing penalties for texting while driving. And I just wanted to follow up on that issue as a safety issue for your group. Are you seeing a lot more of this, and how is it affecting motorcycle safety? You know, people on their cell phones, people texting, other distractions. So are you, I mean, you probably have a unique vantage point to see some of these behaviors. And how do you assess that? And is this going to be part of the training as well?
Mr. Berger.
Chairman and Representative, being aware of drivers texting is certainly part of an overall awareness campaign. Motorcyclists are trained as they're learning to ride a bike or when they come back for advanced training to make eye contact with the driver of a car. Now, if you go to that extra effort of making that eye contact, you're going to notice if they're holding a phone visibly here or trying to secret it down in their lap while they're driving. That's a fairly obvious thing. Whereas the training programs don't specifically address texting. Texting is a huge problem for motorcyclists, and actually for motorists of all kind. As soon as someone removes their attention from the road in front of them to anything else, you're flirting with disaster. But these training programs do actively train motorcyclists to be aware of another driver's behavior while they're behind the wheel.
Chair Hornstein?
No, thank you. That's very helpful.
Chair Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is that a mock-up or is that the actual size? That's bigger than some motorcycles I see.
Mr. Chairman and
Representative Nash.
This is an artist's rendition just to show what it might look like. Okay. The bill actually has a provision in it that says that there would be a mock-up or a design that's agreed upon. This is for example purposes so that anybody sitting way over there on the other side of the committee room can actually see what it might look like.
Representative Earhart.
I have one other question, Mr. Chairman. If you were trying to reduce fatalities, wouldn't it be best if we'd pass a mandatory helmet law for motorcycle folks?
Representative Nash or Mr. Berger?
Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, that's a completely separate issue, and I believe that training people for safe operation of motorcycles is important, but I also support their right to decide whether they do or do not wish to ride with a helmet, and so I appreciate that.
Well, Mr. Chairman, you seem to thrust here that you wanted to reduce fatalities, and I know actually that would help you, but that's all right if you don't want to wear a helmet. I don't care.
Mr. Chair,
Representative
members, Mr. Berger has been of great assistance to me in my desire to own a motorcycle, so we're slowly lobbying my wife. I'm losing that battle to date, but he actually has a very good answer to Representative Earhart's question regarding what helmets do and don't do. So, Mr. Berger, if you'd be so kind.
Mr. Berger, if you want to answer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Nash. Helmets are certainly something that are encouraged by the DPS through their motorcycle training programs. Any rider that goes through a training program will be instructed on the proper safety gear to wear, and then it is up to the motorcyclist to determine what is best for the environment and conditions in which they're riding. The use of a helmet is one part of a vast array of a motorcycle safety environment. Part of that is your situational awareness, the training that you have on your motorcycle, the year that you have riding the motorcycle, the conditions of the weather while you're riding the motorcycle. It's certainly a facet of being safe on a bike. And A-Beta Minnesota and myself as a rider, we encourage riders to wear the safety gear that they feel comfortable in at all times and what they deem appropriate. And we applaud DPS for including safety gear training in the training programs that they offer for new and returning motorcyclists.
Thank you. Representative Earhart?
Well, Mr. Chairman, the reason I asked that question is that I heard that if they were required to wear helmets, we'd cut down on the number of organ donors in the state.
Either testifier prefer to comment? Anything else, Representative Earhart?
No, that's all.
Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, and I like this bill, and I appreciate you bringing it forward. I have taken motorcycle safety, and I believe it's increased my safety on the road as a motorcycle driver. Representative Nash, I do have a question for you. How many bills are you presenting today?
Representative Nash. Chair and Representative Kosnick, I will preempt the question that I know is coming. This, I do have two bills up today, but these are not my maiden voyage on presenting bills, so I did not bring snacks for you. My sincerest apologies, but...
This is your first time in front of the committee?
Ribs and Ash?
Mr. Chair, members, let the cat fight begin. I will make it up to you on another day, Representative Kosnick. We did try, but schedules didn't allow since I had to be here this morning at a little before 8 for my first committee. And I didn't want to bring you stale donuts.
Representative Nash, we have a late meeting coming up this week. Just
I'm happy to provide that.
All right, thank you.
I think dinner would suffice. Thank you.
There you go. Any other questions by the committee? Are there any testimony from the audience? Anybody who love to testify either for or with concerns on this bill? If not, Representative Nash, would you like to renew your motion?
Mr. Chair, yes, I would like to renew my motion for House File 553 for possible inclusion. I appreciate your support. This is a good bill that allows folks who wish to voluntarily take advantage of this to do so with no impact to the state.
Thank you, and your bill will be laid over for possible inclusion. Would you like to take a minute to take clear and then go ahead and submit your next bill and with motion?
Mr. Chair, I would like to invite the next round of testifiers down. And would move House File 1159 for possible inclusion.
Go ahead, Representative Nash.
Mr. Chair, I am joined by two testifiers who I will let introduce themselves, and then we'll get into the meat of the bill, if you would.
Please, testifiers, please introduce yourselves and give your name for the record, please.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. John Hausladen, President of the Minnesota Trucking Association.
Mr. Chair, George Brooks.
Thank you. Representative Nash, if you would like to explain your bill.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you. I've learned early on in the legislature that I get to talk about some strange words in some of my bills. We're talking about skirts on the back of motor vehicles, specifically tractor trailers, and this is a very straightforward bill. This is a conformality bill. The state of Minnesota does not conform to national statutes that allow the skirt, and you've got a copy of what it may look like in your packet, on the back of tractor trailers to be used on Minnesota state roads. It's just simply bringing us into compliance with the federal law, and it's a really good bill. It reduces the amount of drag on the back of the tractor trailer and reduces the total amount of gasoline or diesel that is burned. So with that, I would hand it over to my testifiers.
Go ahead with whichever one would like to start.
All right. Thank you again, Mr. Chair. John Hausladen, Minnesota Trucking Association. The MTA is a statewide organization representing roughly 700 trucking fleets and their allied members. And I'm here today with Mr. Brooks to provide testimony in support of House File 1159. And we will tag team on our brief comments. So as Representative Nash noted, you have a sheet here. We'll be referring to that on both sides. But really the side where you see the two trucks will be the most relevant, where it shows the back of the truck. House File 1159, as we said, is a conformity bill, and if passed, it would allow truckers to use what we call trailer tails. That's actually a brand, but you can also call a trailer tail, on all of Minnesota's roadways. And a trailer tail is a device that reduces drag by redirecting the airflow at the back of the trailer. And you see, again, in this upper left-hand corner, how without it, there's a lot of turbulence. And then when you add the trailer tail, it streamlines and makes the vehicle more stable. Under the last federal highway bill, MAP 21, trailer tails were authorized for use on the national network, which is the interstates and designated state highways. However, the state patrol brought to our attention the fact that they're not technically allowed on other Minnesota routes without specific legislative action. And the issue is adding these tails put the trailer roughly 5 feet over the maximum allowable 53-foot length of a trailer. So it extends them. House File 1159 modifies the statute to permit their use, and the State Patrol supports our efforts to bring clarity for their purposes of roadside enforcement. And I guess I want to stress, because you've dealt with this issue already, this does not allow us to haul any more freight. It's not about heavier trucks. We can't haul more freight. It's just putting some panels on the back that redirect airflow. They're foldable. They're collapsible. And now Mr. Brooks will tell you a little bit about them because his company uses them.
Mr. Brooks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm George Brooks. I'm the general manager of Taylor Truck Line. We're a second-generation family-owned business located in Northfield, Minnesota. We have 361 tractors. 70 of them are in our flatbed division. The remainder are in our van division. We haul freight of all kinds, and most of our hauling lanes are east of the Mississippi River. The concept behind a trailer tail is quite simple. As you can see from the diagram that John has pointed out, a tractor trailer tail running at highway speeds creates quite a lot of air turbulence at the rear of the tractor. This turbulence creates a drag effect, which causes the truck to use more fuel. By adding the tail, we eliminate the drag. This improves vehicle stability, reduces driver fatigue, and improves visibility in wet weather. We've all passed a semi and had in the rain, and you have poor visibility. This allows the rain to sheet off and does not have that effect at the back end of a trailer. The trailers are deployed when traveling down the roadway. They fold away when backing into a dock, and they do not obscure the safety devices such as lights or placards on a trailer, and they're placed high enough so that they are not affected or they couldn't be hit by a standard motor vehicle. The manufacturer has demonstrated fuel savings greater than 5%. Our trucks outfitted with these devices are saving approximately 5.5%. The financial payback on these devices depends on the price of fuel. The higher the fuel price goes, the quicker the payback. Using a rate of $3 per gallon and a truck using 20,000 gallons of diesel fuel annually, the payback at 5% would be 7 to 8 months. However, the environmental impact to everyone is immediate. Improved fuel efficiency means less fuel burned and thus fewer carbon emissions. The trailer tail will not be right for every trucker. They are not effective on our flatbed equipment. They may not be effective on some local equipment that doesn't go over 55 miles an hour for the majority of their time. But for certain applications, they can be a valuable cost-saving addition. I urge you to pass House File 1159 so that trailer tails can be used on all Minnesota roads where they make sense.
Thank you, Mr. Brooks. And just a follow-up question quick. Am I correct in assuming that even cars driving behind them have noticed a difference in the turbulence and impact of it as well?
Yes. Yep. Not only in visibility, but also you can feel that sway sometimes when you're sure. When you're next to one. It does help with that. It helps with the stability of the actual what the driver's feeling in high winds. They can feel a sway, and this helps reduce that.
Okay. Thank you,
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead, Mr.
If I may.
Representative Nash.
Chair members, I was actually speaking with Representative Uglum on this. Interesting that we were just talking about safety and motorcycles. He said that when he rides behind a trailer that he can actually feel that turbulence, and this would minimize that and enhance the safety of my bill that we just talked about.
Thank you. Representative Hausman.
That was my question as well.
Okay. Any other questions from the committee? Representative Sandin.
Thank you. Just one concern. I do believe under Minnesota statute that you can't have any anything extended beyond 4 feet of a taillight. I don't know, we've got law enforcement in the room here. They may be able to answer that, but is there an exception that we'd have to fit into this as well?
Mr. Houselade.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, that's exactly what this bill does, is it changes the statutes to create the exception so that they can be used. Yes.
Thank Representative you. Sandin.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions from the committee? Is there anyone? I'm sorry, Representative Houseman.
And to follow up to that, has the state patrol weighed in on the issue?
Is somebody from the patrol wishing to give comment?
Mr. Chair, if I may.
Representative Nash.
Mr. We heard early on in the testimony that this was actually brought to the attention by the State Patrol that they didn't wish to see it operate on federal roads but not on state roads, so they brought it to the attention, and hence the impetus for this bill.
Okay.
But we're happy to be joined by the State Patrol.
If the State Patrol, do you have a comment or not?
They're correct.
Okay. As a resource, you do very good. Thank you. Appreciate that. Any other questions from the committee? Is there anybody from the audience that would wish to testify? Yes, sir.
What do you guys?
Please state your name for the record.
Bob again, Carney Jr., registered lobbyist. I see the fiscal note says no effect, but there's a 5% reduction in the fuel consumption, and there's no change in the weight, of course. But I'm just wondering if there's any effect in terms of revenue coming into the state if less fuel is bought for the vehicles. Just wondering about that.
Well, thank you for your concern. Does research staff, Mr. Burris or Andy Lee, have any concerns about that? Okay. Do you have any comment, Mr. Burris?
Mr. Chair and members, the fiscal note doesn't reference any reduction or appreciable reduction in fuel tax revenues. That's something that could be taken back to the department for them to consider. If the committee is interested, we could provide that information back to the department for them to evaluate the fiscal note further.
Thank you, Mr. Burris. Any other questions or anyone else from the audience that would like to testify? With that, Representative Nash, would you like to renew your motion?
Mr. Chair, thank you. I would like to renew my motion for House File 1159 for possible inclusion.
So ordered, it will be included in possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill or transportation bill. Representative Sanders, we are ready for you. Thank you for coming, Representative Sanders. Do you have a preference on which one you prefer to start with?
We'll start with House File 293, if that's okay, Chair.
Okay. I will move House File 293 for possible inclusion in the Transportation Omnibus Bill. And Representative Sanders, please report on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 293 deals with some technical fixes to a program or a license plate that the House authorized last year. With me here today is Mr. Reed LeBeau, who can also comment on the bill.
I noticed that there is also an amendment. Would you like? I will move that amendment as well. That is H0293A1. Is there any other discussion on the amendment?
Mr. Chair, that does put the bill in the shape that I would like.
Are there any other discussions? If not, all in favor of adding this amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion prevails, and your bill is in the order that you like. Please continue. Please state your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Reed LeBeau. I represent the Minnesota section of the Professional Golfers Association. Last year, through the hard work of Representative Sundin, we were able to pass a specialty license plate for the that highlights golf in the state of Minnesota. This bill and the amendment that you just adopted just clarifies the dates on which the license plate is going to be released and when the funds that are collected through the sales of the license plates will come into the state. Initially, we had set the date for 2017. Last year, in conversations with the Department of Transportation or Department of Public Safety, rather, I thought that they would need that long with their system to be able to have everything generated, and they would need until 2017 to collect the money. We've been working with them over the interim, and they're through diligent work at the department, they've been able to get everything lined up so that we can have both the release of the plate and the collection of the money at the same time. And through agreement, we have agreed and committed to the department that will all happen on or after August 1st of this year. The amendment corresponds with the fiscal calendar, but we've agreed with them that will happen in August. So.
Thank you. Any other comments at this point? Are there any questions about this bill from the committee? Is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify either for or with concerns on this bill? If not, then I will renew my motion that this bill, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in the transportation omnibus bill. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? So ordered.
Thank you, Mr.
On to your Chairman. Next bill, Representative Sanders.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll move House File 1160. I'm not sure where it's supposed to go after this.
This one will also be laid over as well, I believe.
Perfect.
I'll move House File 1160 for a possible inclusion into the transportation, as well as I believe there is at least one amendment. Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
That is H 1160A1. I will move that amendment. Is there any other discussion? All in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion prevails, and the bill is now in the order in which you would prefer it. So continue on.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 1160, it's a joint effort between DPS and the Minnesota Truckers Association. Maintains safe maintenance practices and helps reduce some paperwork. And with me here today is Mr. John Hausladen from the Truckers Association to explain the bill a little more in depth.
Mr. Hausladen, could you restate your name for the record, please?
Sure. Mr. Chairman, members, John Hausladen, Minnesota Trucking Association. The last bill, you reduced emissions. This one, you're going to reduce paperwork. Really, the federal government made a change that dealt with just the paperwork regarding inspections. This does not change the inspection requirement. Every day a truck must be inspected before it goes out on the road. Previously, you would inspect the truck, and if everything was good, you still completed the form, and then you handed it in, you maintained and filed that. The federal government said, well, we will eliminate that, but because of the way our statute is structured, that took care of it for interstate travel, but it did not take care of it for intrastate trucking companies. So we have to amend the statute so that it makes that change parallel. So again, that if you're an intrastate trucker, you inspect your truck, you don't find any defects, you don't have to file the paperwork. You still have to do the inspection every day, but if you find a defect, you mark it, gets tracked, gets put in the file, and it must be fixed before the truck's put back on the road. So it is a conformity issue.
Thank you, Mr. Mahoslan. That was a question I was going to ask. This, I think, is just really a conformity issue for the federal statutes as well, and it really may not impact. Any questions from the committee? Is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify for this bill or with concerns? Representative Sandin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Does this in any way restrict, let's say, a company from adding on their inspection requirements? Let's say a company really wants to have their reports done daily.
Mr. Hausladen.
Mr. Chair, no, this wouldn't prohibit a company from having more stringent internal controls if they want it.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Sandin. Last call for any other questions? If not, then I renew my motion to lay this bill over for a possible inclusion in the transportation omnibus bill. Thank you, Representative. Appreciate that. The final bill today is Representative Norton.
I'm not sure he'll announce it. I think 4:30.
Mr. Chair, is it appropriate to move House File 1350?
It is, and I believe it is scheduled to go to Health and Human Services, correct?
It is indeed.
So I would entertain your motion.
Thank you very much. Members and Chair, this particular bill is the official work of the Non-Emergency Medical Transportation Advisory Committee, of which Ms. Abderholden, to my left, has chaired for the past 3 years? Feels like 10, but perhaps 3 years. And we passed the bulk of the language before you last year, but funding wasn't available to implement all of it. And so we're moving ahead with more of the recommendation and some additional changes this year. And so rather than go into a lot of the detail about the whole bill and the whole procedure, I'll skip that, but I'll be happy to answer questions. It has been 3 years' worth of work, all parties at the table. We've been really pleased to have MnDOT at the table. They've been very helpful, and so I think we're going to limit our discussion here today just to the MnDOT portion. And I think they're just getting the fiscal note, which I can talk about, that's going to be handed out here in a few minutes because it came in right as the committee started, and I can tell you about that. I wanted to reiterate that I've mentioned this in the last couple days, that Minnesota has been the non-emergency medical transportation has been woefully under the national average in having the use of public transportation, private drivers, and other modes of transportation. We have a very strong and robust NEMT program, and I won't go into the details about what it used to be called, but we have a robust system, but we also have not taken advantage of savings we can have by having people use the cheaper, more cost-effective modes of transportation. So that is part of what this committee has done. One of the other things that the committee did was try to professionalize the trade and raise the standard of vehicles out on the road. And so the part that you're seeing before you today that I think you're going to focus on is that we have added a $45 fee after some study that MnDOT's been doing, trying to get a grasp on how many vehicles will need to be licensed as we move ahead, and that the vehicles will all be licensed and therefore tracked for safety. And then the fiscal note has a $17,000 fee for this next year, but then there is savings of $12,000, $55,000, and another $12,000 on the next year's out. So overall, there is savings, or at least the department has recouped its costs through the use of the license and registration. And because it probably will come up, the providers that were at the table have agreed to the registration fee. They think it's reasonable. And hopefully, at the end of the day, this entire bill will be moved rather than the kind of odd pieces and parts that are moving through the process in other committees right now. This is the full deal. It has those other components, but it actually has this part that's so very important, which is making certain people are taking buses, volunteer drivers, or reimbursed for mileage rather than the most expensive form of transportation. And we're going to free up that money to pay the drivers and those services a better rate, which we haven't been able to do.
Before we continue on, I think you do have an amendment to the bill as well.
I believe there's two amendments in your packet. We can move those. I see two. We had one, which is the local agency's financial obligation is limited to funds provided by the state or federal government.
That is H1350A1.
A1, the A1 amendment.
And would you like to move that amendment?
Yes, please.
A motion has been made to approve this amendment. Is there any questions or discussions about the amendment? If not, all in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
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 All against, same sign. It has been amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The other one in my packet was a miss. It was another bill.
Yeah, correct. You are correct.
So I'm sorry about that.
So continue on with your testimony in regards to your amended bill.
Yeah, the amendment just was really language so that the counties made very clear that they don't take over the portion that we hope they will someday take over until the funding is made available and the web-based services are made available by the state. So it's comfort language. It probably was in there anyway, but if this makes it clear, we're more than happy to make the counties comfortable. So with that, I think we would, I think Sue Abderholden, who was chair of that committee, probably would be a great testifier, and then there may be others.
Okay, testifier, please state your name for the record, please.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, Sue Abderholden, Executive Director of NAMI Minnesota National Alliance on Mental Illness.
Could you spell that, because I'm not sure I could pronounce it.
Oh, sure. It's A, B as in boy, D as in dog, Erholden. It's very phonetic. It's just scary.
Alderholden. Abderholden. All right.
Thank you. This task force, as you know, has tackled some very tough issues related to non-emergency medical transportation, and I'm sure everyone will be glad when we're finally done moving to a single administrative structure. I think what's important about the legislation this year is last year when we did make sure what we used to call ATS, Access Transportation Services, saying that they had to be certified by the Department of Transportation, none of us knew how many vehicles that would be. And so it became kind of a huge fiscal note, and none of us were really sure. So we actually created a variance process so that those providers could still get Medicaid funding through our medical assistance division, but they had to apply for a waiver. So that way, or variance, so that way we'd at least know how many vehicles that would be. And it's come up to be around 700-some vehicles. So then when we looked at what would the cost be of certifying those vehicles, and wanted to make sure that it was cost neutral, they realized that that per vehicle amount would be too high, and everyone in the group said, well, if we spread it around everyone, it would be much lower, and that's how the $45 came up. So it's a pretty solid number in terms of figuring out what the total cost would be. It really is important that these vehicles be certified. While we think of someone maybe who is using a wheelchair and using a specialized transportation vehicle as being vulnerable, so are people who are actually ambulatory as well. You could have a young person with autism, person with developmental disability, and we want to make sure that these drivers are also have had background checks, that their vehicles are in safe working order in order to use our medical assistance dollars. We are tweaking some language with the Department of Transportation. We met late yesterday, nothing really substantive, but just wanted to make sure that you knew that. The only other thing I wanted to mention is that right now under DOT rules, you have to be careful about how you use the words emergency and medical and transportation, but you know, people want to know that it's actually a non-emergency medical transportation vehicle, and so just kind of a little exemption there so that they can use those words on their vehicle. The other part in this is that we know that there is no way that come July 1st that the Department of Transportation can quickly certify all those vehicles. So we're allowing some kind of lead time in there so that they can grant a variance if they know that their classes are filled. So we want to give people time to do this and time for the Department of Transportation to ramp up. So I would really urge your support on this. As always, this is a carefully crafted kind of negotiation between all these various organizations, and there is peace in the valley, which is always a good thing.
Thank you. I have a quick question, and either you or Representative Norton may know. On page 5, you talk about the maximum miles from for a trip. Was there some sort of process determined as to how you came up with the 30 and 60 miles per trip?
Mr. Chairman, that's actually an existing law. It just got moved to a different place.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Uglum?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Quick question. This program in the past has been plagued a little bit by, you know, some fraud and improper billing and everything else. Do you feel that by setting these standards and these rates and, that we'll go a long ways to taking care of that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, this is a start for that, so at least we know that we have vehicles that are actually functioning and drivers that have had received training. There are some other pieces associated with this. In the Department of Human Services policy bill, there's actually some language about how you record the trips to make sure that you're using either, you know, electronic means or you're printing out MapQuest or something like that to verify what those miles are. And then an attestation so that the person and the driver are saying, yes, I was picked up here and was dropped off there.
Representative Uglum?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Follow-up. Well, we just heard the trucking industry testify here this afternoon, and, of course, their use of GPSs, and GPS is pretty cheap nowadays, can and does track their drivers, make sure that they're not stop it off for a coffee or whatever, and all of that, and can provide estimated dock time, so on and so forth. Has there been any consideration about that?
Ms. Abdul-Holden?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, Representative, yes. So in the policy bill, they're talking about using any type of electronic means, I mean, because there's different kinds of GPS or,
right.
You know, electronic gizmos that people can use. So they want to make sure that you can use those, too, instead of just writing down the mileage. Absolutely.
Representative Uglum?
Yes, and I think that would go a long way as to eliminating the fraud. The technology exists. It's in the private marketplace. It could be applied to this, and there would be very difficult to get around it. Thank you.
Representative Norton?
Yes, and I would say we have been dealing with this for a couple of years, and I will say one of the biggest objections we came to at the beginning when we started talking about this is that there were too many choices, actually, of mileage trackers, and they didn't always agree. And so this has been an issue we've talked extensively about. If they're using a MapQuest versus a something else, we, you know, maybe it wouldn't count. And so it's been an ongoing discussion. I think we're finally coming to a place that everybody does agree that GPS or some sort of system needs to be agreed on. And we do hope we can even move to the next step, which is holding up the full funding of the entire bill, which is some sort of electronic system for the brokering, for the tracking, for the whole thing. And we have some pilots out there. We're not quite ready there to deploy it. The departments aren't to deploy it statewide, but that is the next step.
We did receive the fiscal note or revenue note here, and before we get into that, and I know you want to talk about that, is there anybody in the audience that would like to testify for this bill or with concerns? We'll get to the fiscal note right after that, if it's okay.
Thank you.
And please state your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Michael Widener. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Paratransit Providers Association. I'm also a member of the task force. And going to the representatives, I'll start with the representatives' concerns about GPS. The Minnesota Paratransit Providers Association has been instrumental in trying to keep fraud out of this industry. One of the things that we did is working with the department, we instituted a policy where the medical provider has to sign for the individual, much like a package delivery system. When a person's dropped off at a medical provider, the medical provider signs that they have received this individual. What this language in this bill does is actually eliminates that requirement. And it permits the rider to certify that they've been delivered. We believe from the Minnesota Paratransit Providers Association that that is a step backwards from a fraud perspective. With respect to GPS, we wholeheartedly support the use of GPS. This bill does not require GPS. In our discussions with the Department of Transportation yesterday regarding the very issue of GPS, what we said was we're not concerned about the odometer readings, what we do start and end odometer readings, but let's require everybody to use GPS. That is not in this bill, and that's not been supported. One of the other problems with this bill is the use and the requirement of cameras in the vehicles. With the issues surrounding police and body cameras, we believe that this is an issue that definitely needs to be vetted. You know, you can have, the state is requiring cameras in the vehicles for protected class. And you may have people that are being transported pursuant to a fee for service with the state of Minnesota, and you may also have individuals in that same vehicles who are not under the fee for service requirement. The question becomes, who owns that camera? You know, is it really necessary for people who are not in the fee for service side of this? So there are some concerns. This is not a peace in the valley bill. This is a county broker bill. There are provisions in this that the special transportation industry, which transports the more disabled individuals, does not support. We do support regulation of the taxi industry and what's going, you know, requiring additional certifications so that they are brought up to our standards. We do support that. But there are some significant concerns that my association has with this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Widener. Representative Norton, I think you have some follow-up concerns.
Well, here? And I would like Ms. Abderholden to please come up as well. This has been a difficult group, to say the least. There is an outlier in the group that has a different opinion. The rest of them, and in fact, let me just go back to the first comment that was made. If you look on page 5.25 through 5.30, there is language about non-emergency medical transportation providers must maintain log trips, which include pickup and drop-off times signed by the medical provider or client, which is deemed most appropriate, attesting to mileage traveled to obtain covered medical services. If you will look up higher on the page, you will find that that is cut and pasted from the same language. It is not a change in law at all. This is what everyone agreed to in the committee. It's what was passed into law last year. We're simply moving it down to a different section of law. So in my opinion, that if that is a concern, that's a concern of the system as it's always been. the language before you was approved of by the full group. As far as the camera, I'm going to let Sue talk about that. While I have attended almost all the meetings in the last 3 years, every other week for half a day, all summer long, mm-hmm. and all fall long, there are a couple I have missed, and I don't recall this discussion, so I'll let Ms. Abderholden.
Ms. Abderholden.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Sue Abderholden, Nowy, Minnesota. So the language that's actually called protected transport, which I just want to say is the only thing that I cared about in all of non-emergency medical transportation, is, I'm sorry, is an alternative for a person who is having a mental health crisis to be transported to a medical facility, whether it's a Medicaid-funded crisis home, an urgent care, an emergency room, something like that. Right now, pretty much people get handcuffed and put in the back of a police car, or they get tied to a stretcher and moved in an ambulance. It is not a great way to go when you're having a mental health crisis. Protected transport is actually being developed in other states around the country. This language was actually passed last year. And what it is, and we haven't been able to implement it because there was no money to implement it. But it's an alternative so that you can have an unmarked car. We do it now in Yellow Medicine, and I believe it's Beltrami County as well. An unmarked car, so you've got the barrier there, the plexiglass barrier. The camera is for not only the individual's safety, but for the driver's as well, because, again, you're transporting vulnerable people. This was passed last year. There's no other people in the vehicle. If they're transporting someone who's having a mental health crisis, they haven't picked somebody else up on the way to drop them off at the doctor. They have to have specialized training to do this as well. So I just want to, again, remind people this was passed last year. We did talk about this as a viable option and, frankly, a much cheaper option for both county and local government medical in general. So the mental health community has been totally, totally supportive of this alternative type of transportation for someone having a mental health crisis.
Thank you for your, all three of your testimony, and I just remind us all that as we go through, it's okay for us to have differences of opinion on things, and we can certainly agree to disagree on some of those things. But to any one of these testifiers, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks to all the testifiers. I can't overstate the challenge of non-emergency medical transportation on the countryside. I don't know if you have the same problem in the metropolitan area, but this is a huge issue. Where the other day we saw gaps in public transportation. This is very real and affects the lives of a lot of people. And in the last comments about the police and the sheriff's departments, I consistently hear about their roles with mentally ill people have expanded, and there are questions about their ability to work with it. There's just a lot of issues that surround this. My question is, given that challenge, does this bill make non-emergency medical transportation more accessible to those who need it?
Any other testifiers?
Sure. I would say yes, for some populations it'll make it more accessible than it's ever been. I think it will make it safer for those using it. I think we have moved ahead in making it, making there be less fraud and abuse in the system. Will it increase the number of providers? I don't know, but federal law says that we should be asking people on MA and that can use different, it's the kind of the least restrictive type of transportation. I'm not sure that's the right language, but that's what the federal law says we're supposed to do. In Minnesota, we've been very generous. And the program, and I don't have the data in front of me, but we're here because of an OLA report that was quite damning a number of years ago. Representative McDonald and Representative Barrett were part of this whole thing. It was a damning report, and we're trying to improve the system. Do I think we have fixed everything? No. I lost my train of thought on my second point, but this is moving us in the right direction and getting us to a better place in the state and freeing up money. That was my point. Freeing up money by putting people in the least restrictive and closest hospitals and doctor's offices the way the federal law intended, and freeing up that money in order to pay the providers what they need to provide the transportation. There's a whole bunch of things like deadhead miles and all this stuff I'm not going to go into in this committee that is of concern to those providers. And perhaps if we can pay them, reimburse them at a rate that they deserve so that they can do their jobs. Maybe more will open and there'll be more access. That remains to be seen. I don't want to make that promise.
I think Representative Johnson offered it to all of you, so I will give each of you the opportunity to speak if you wish.
Mr. Chairman, I think one of the important pieces on the building and what Representative Norton said is that we have paid individuals, reimbursed them next to nothing to drive their own vehicles or to have their family members drive. And if you're living, frankly, on Social Security, $500, $600 a month, you barely have a car to begin with. That was really a problem. And so one of the top priorities of the task force was to actually increase the personal mileage level so that it would be up to, frankly, what the IRS, allows you to do under a business. Thinking that that would help spur it on, or maybe you have somebody else, a friend or a neighbor or, a family member who could then maybe afford to do that for you. So we thought that was number one. Number two is actually looking at the volunteer mileage as well. Volunteers get a little trickier because if you pay them more than what the IRS allows for a volunteer, then that extra amount can be taxed as income once you hit a certain amount. So we wanted to be flexible. But in rural Minnesota, they rely a lot on volunteer drivers, and that could be problematic for some. The other thing is that the 4.5% cut has been in place for some time, and that really does hurt drivers and companies. And especially when gas prices were high, that made it very difficult for new people to get into the business. So we think that eliminating that 4.5% cut would actually really help drivers and these companies that provide this service and hopefully get more people into the business.
Mr. Widener, do you have a comment?
I do, Mr. Chair. Thank you so much. First and foremost, I do have clients that do provide protected transport. And what I mean by that is they provide transportation in a secure vehicle with a shield between them and the passenger with secure locks. So my clients do already provide that. They don't have the cameras in the vehicles. The second thing is one of the concerns with this bill is that it takes the OLA's report, and in the OLA's report it considered that we have two separate industries. We have an STS industry, which are more the handicapped and the disabled people, and then we have an ATS industry, which are more your taxi cabs and your ambulatory people. And it found a lot of problems with the ambulatory side or the ATS side. And what has happened with this task force is the task force is now trying to adopt the methodology of the taxi side and bring the special transportation side over to it. And what I mean by that is they want to put in the middle a broker, a county or a hired broker. The problem with that is that the broker is, as we've seen in the metropolitan area, the broker is not putting people on the bus. You have a broker in Hennepin and Ramsey County. 100% of the people in Ramsey County and Hennepin, or in Minneapolis and St. Paul, live within a half a mile of the bus. That's according to the MTC reports. However, the use of the bus line is less than 10% by the broker. We believe that's a problem. We believe that there's a better methodology for putting people on the bus other than instituting a broker or a county broker. So we do support a lot of things in this bill. There are concerns. We would support a direct call, direct pay, which is in the STS industry, which means once you have a level of need determined, you call the person and the company of your choice. You don't go through a middle person, the county or the broker. So we believe that this will not expand access to the population. It will increase costs significantly. And there's better ways to expand access. Thank you.
Thank you for your concerns. Representative Johnson, do you have a follow-up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do. It's actually on a similar setup. A year or two ago, we had some issues with brokers.
There's no brokers.
And I'm wondering if that's relevant to this and it involved the nursing homes and if that fits with this bill. Thanks.
Mr. Chair, there is no broker requirement in here. In fact, one of the main points that we've talked about in the committee time after time is that patients will be allowed to make a call to the provider of their choice. I will say, however, that due to the fraud issue that's come up by some of the providers out there who are now being investigated in a big way, That is making it harder to move ahead with that because there are such concerns about the use of fraud that the committee's recommendations to make sure that direct access from any citizen wanting to choose the provider of their choice is in jeopardy, but it is not in this bill.
Thank you. I think we're going to move on to other questions. We have Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Norton, for working on this. It sounds like from the legislative audit experience that it's something that needs to be addressed. I'm concerned, though, and I've articulated earlier in committee, in rural Minnesota we have, and I've learned now that it's STS, and I don't know what that stands for, but that we have people, we have disabled folks and people in nursing homes who need transportation, and as I've talked to these folks over the last couple of weeks, they're providing it out of their Medicaid funds or wherever they get it from, and so they've got their own system they develop. In addition to that, we've got a Department of Transportation that has developed this elaborate network of rural transit with people throughout the counties in Minnesota that seems to be kind of doing its own thing. And they aren't talking, they aren't working together, they aren't talking to the county boards, at least the ones in my district that I talk to. Here we look like we're maybe injecting yet another program or another approach to further convolute the waters. What are we doing to bring these three streams of spending together into one that works and securely focuses on the needs of all of those? And I think I would still argue, and I think the gentleman talked about it a little bit, when you talk about access, I mean, in rural Minnesota, if you're able to get somewhere, in Winona County, if you're able to get somewhere, or you need to get somewhere, you get somewhere. Unless you're disabled or very elderly or something, you either take your own car or you call your sister or you call your folks or whatever you do, you get there. We need to focus on, and I think some of the people you are looking at are some of the people that we need to help in that, but we need to bring these streams of revenue or these streams of spending together so we create some efficiency. We're not doing yet another system out there that's spending the people's money and just increasing the cost of government and making the people in Minnesota poorer. So sorry the question went so long, but what are we doing to address that?
Representative Norton.
Well, I think Ms. Abderholden will address this too, but you're absolutely right, and this bill is addressing exactly what you're talking about. It's rural Minnesota does things differently than the metro area. That's been clear from almost day one of this committee. In rural Minnesota, volunteer drivers are huge. Personal mileage isn't being used nearly enough for people that are ambulatory and that can manage. This bill focuses on that, and that's why, as Ms. Abderholden said, our top priority is making certain that we increase the mileage reimbursement for volunteers and for personal drivers first before we do the rest of it, because our system has grown. Honestly, if you could see the chart, when this started as a specialized transportation MA benefit and we added the broker many years ago, it blossomed, and our access transportation grew many, many times over. We're now trying to get a handle on that and shrink it back down, put things in perspective, let people who can use volunteers get a reimbursement that makes it worth their while instead of picking up the phone and calling someone, and saving these wonderful providers who do a service for those truly in need, that we have the money to pay them appropriately. That's what this committee is all about.
Ms. Abderholden.
One of the other things that is kind of forcing everyone to come together is actually the Olmstead decision. Each agency in state government has been given kind of a charge to figure out how do we implement Olmstead, and that is especially true in transportation, to make sure that people with disabilities can actually participate in their communities and getting the transportation they need. So in rural Minnesota, how do you make sure that if you have kind of a county system here and another little system here, that they come together to make sure that people have greater access to transportation to get places than they did before? We just heard just at our last meeting from the Department of Transportation about what they're thinking about in terms of, you know, kind of hubs, if you will, and how that could work with what we were kind of going towards as well. So those discussions are taking place.
Mr. Wiesner?
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Chair, to touch on the representative's issue, the problem that is with this bill is that in the metro right now, and what it's doing, it's putting a person between the individual receiving the transportation and the provider. So what you have to do is you have to now call. What this bill is going to do is you're going to have to call a third party, and then third party will call the provider and set up the ride. That is part of the problem here.
That is not a part of the bill.
It is absolutely.
I want to remind us all that we are just discussing perspectives here, and please keep your comments to the bill itself.
And so the problem with that is by sending this to the counties, you're imposing a third party. Right now in the metro area, the broker gets paid $5.71 for every trip it sets up. That includes every bus trip. And that's a one-way trip. So one way there and one way back. You take a bus, you got a $2 bus cost and a $5.71 surcharge from a broker. What we're asking is to look at direct call and direct bill, and that way the money goes to the providers who are providing this ride. And that's one of the problems. You know, right now there's a 4.5% cut to providers for transportation. That's a problem. That's a huge problem in rural Minnesota. When you have gas that's almost $4 a gallon, it cuts into the ability of people to provide rides. So there are some serious concerns, and there's some ways to resolve it.
Yeah, I'm going to just make a little bit of a call here, and I think rather than having kind of a panel discussion up here all the time in regards to this, I'm going to ask that we all kind of address our questions to the representative, and at the end, if there are any final comments that you may wish to do, we will do that instead, because otherwise we could be here all day, and we have quite a bit more. So with that, Representative Draskowski.
I think I'll yield to the chair here, Mr. Chair.
Representative Kelly?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Norton, just in that line, if I'm a disabled person right now out in the rural district, what's the process? What am I going to do?
Well, first, and this doesn't change in the bill currently, you have to have your mode determined, and currently it's ATS or STS. We're actually changing that, so you'll be determined what type of ride you're going to get. It will be a wheelchair, will be a, you know, the mode of transportation. And once that is determined and you're approved for a particular appointment, a doctor appointment, and this has been approved, and you can call your provider in rural Minnesota or get a volunteer to take you to your appointment and back. That's documented. I believe some of the providers bill directly currently, and some don't. And
STS so providers bill the state directly.
Because we have two different systems, which we are trying to make into one system. Mm-hmm. That was part of the OLA decision. So what we're doing now and what we're going to do will change, in that everyone will be using the same system rather than two different ones.
Chair Kelly?
Thank you.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Norton, I'm kind of confused here because I'm hearing some people say that there are brokers, some people say there are no brokers. It's been brought to my attention that we have a broker in the room. Mm-hmm. Would you mind if we hear from him?
Certainly. And we do have brokers in the Twin Cities for some of our transportation. And he can explain the details.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. I was just looking for clarification on this because it's been volleyed back and forth.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. And if you could please state your name for the record, please.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Phil Stahlberger, Vice President of Public Affairs for Medical Transportation Management. We operate in 31 states and provide broker services in those states, either to county governments, city governments, state governments, et cetera. Here in Minnesota, we're called MNET. We have a call center on Robert Street here in St. Paul with about 40 customer service representatives. And yes, we service the 8-county metro area here in Minnesota, and we do a lot of the level of need service that Representative Norton talked about. And I also want to add that this committee has gone through this bill exclusively and extensively, and this doesn't change much in the terms of how things are delivered. In fact, to Representative Norton's point, actually helps to streamline the process. And you're right, there is a lot of confusion because if you are in rural Minnesota, there are more challenges than you have here in the 8-county metro area. We enjoy a plethora of good transportation options here in the metro area. We don't mandate that people take a bus or light rail. We do give the option, as Ms. Abderholden offered. Consumers have options to take transportation. We want to help them use the best mode of transportation possible. What we don't want to have, you often talk about healthcare reform in terms of getting people to use the right service at the right time. That's exactly what this bill does. And we aim at making sure people are using, they're not using an STS provider when they could take a bus or they could use gas mileage reimbursement. We want to see people use the most effective mode of transportation possible. Again, this has been a work in progress for 3+ years. I'm happy to answer more questions, but we provide over 1 million rides a month. That includes bus, light rail, ATS, et cetera. So there are a lot of options here in the metro area. It also depends on what mode you're going to be taking. It also depends on maybe any Medicaid patient has access to transportation. But it depends if you're covered under a PMAP or medical assistance. We have a very bifurcated system of NEMT in this state, and this bill helps streamline many of those processes to make it more efficient.
Representative Anderson?
Thank you, Mr.
I think at this time we will go to the fiscal note that I think you wanted to make some comment on, and then we will close up with final comments.
Yes, I left it on the table here. Yes, you'll see on the fiscal note there is some general fund expenditures, and that's the health and human service side of this, which we will go to that committee next, and we will deal with and see if they want to cover that. But the trunk highway funds through transportation is $17,016, and then there's savings. You'll see $12,000, $55,000, and $12,000 savings. And this is because we have the $45 fee for the certified vehicles, and that offsets the cost to the department as we move forward.
Okay. Any questions on the committee about the fiscal note itself? Representative Hausman?
Not
okay. Anything on the fiscal note? If not, we'll go to final questions about the bill. Representative Hausman.
Well, Mr. Chair, it's like suddenly a light bulb goes on and you realize you've known about this before. And when the gentleman was testifying, I realized that this center used to be in my district. I don't know if it still is. And I had a tour of it and came away incredibly, incredibly impressed by the efficiency of what was being provided there and the cost. And at the time, I think this was several years ago, I think we threw some wrinkles into the system that screwed them up, and which I never quite understood. And so suddenly I'm realizing I can personally attest, having toured that operation, about the efficiency and effectiveness of that.
Thank you. To the testifiers, any comments?
I'll just thank you, Representative Hausman, for touring our facility back then. And yes, there have been numerous wrinkles thrown at us over the course of many years. One of them being is we essentially we're prohibited from actually working with the state of Minnesota. A number of providers have said they don't want to work with a broker and have done everything they can to keep us out of Minnesota. And one of them is by prohibiting us from working with the state directly. Many states, including Wisconsin, have one broker that they put an RFP out. We compete with every other broker in the entire country, and we are currently providing about 240,000 trips a month in the state of Wisconsin. There are challenges in every state, not unlike Minnesota. Minnesota is not unique in the terms of rural Minnesota, rural Wisconsin. We have challenges. We use a lot of gas mileage reimbursement in Wisconsin. We have a great volunteer network, and we're able to go and actually work with the communities and be a part of the community and making sure that people have access to transportation costs. So yes, there have been wrinkles put forth, but we really want to make sure there is a proper NEMT program in Minnesota that really gives people options and also saves taxpayer dollars. And we do a lot of the fraud, waste, and abuse for the 8-county metro area. We'd love the opportunity to do it statewide, but because of that prohibition, we just operate in the metro area.
Okay. Mr. Wiener, I will give you an opportunity for a final comment.
Okay. If I could just add the reason I was involved when the broker was removed, when the state's ability to contract directly with the broker was put into statute, and the reason that was put into statute was the problem with nursing homes and hospital discharges. In order to get somebody discharged from a hospital, the broker required you to call the broker, and the broker would send a vehicle. That caused all kinds of problems with hospital discharges. Nursing homes had the same issue. One of the other things that is a concern is the abuse of the methadone program. The methadone program is really under the auspices of the ATS industry. The ATS industry is what Mr. Stahlberger's company brokers. They set up those rides in the methadone community. So that is a significant concern. The problems with the fraud in the methadone community are apparent. And we don't think that taking STS and making it more like ATS makes this a better program. We believe that letting people call their providers directly and letting the providers bill the state directly is a much better method.
Thank you for your testimony. I appreciate that. And before we get to your final comments, Representative Norton, I think Representative Renbeck had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A quick question. Would somebody have the information as to, number one, are these providers nonprofit or for-profit? And number two, who is the biggest provider in the state?
Representative Norton.
They're for-profit primarily, although the volunteer drivers in rural Minnesota, they may have a group that does, there could be nonprofits helping with that. That I don't know for certain. And I'm not sure who the largest provider in the state is. There are many, many providers.
There are also nonprofits. I believe Alina provides these services. They're a nonprofit. North Memorial is a nonprofit.
Representative Runbeck.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just was wondering the connection between the ambulance service and if that was all part of one big entity, and it appears it is.
Okay, thank you. Representative Norton, do you have any final comments on your bill?
Yeah. As you can see, this has been a very contentious and convoluted process for the last 3 years. Sue Abderholden deserves some sort of special award for the work that she has done. It has been phenomenal. This has been a group consensus, and in fact, I would urge all of you, I know this isn't a priority, and you know, it's probably, because this is transportation, it's a tiny piece of the bill, to read the OLA report. It is eye-opening, and we are here as a result of that. It has been a large group. As I said, we meet regularly, and this is the outcome of that group's work. And so I would urge you to read the OLA report and please support the legislation that is the work of the group.
Thank you, Representative. And seeing no other questions, I will entertain a motion from you to re-refer this to Health Human Services. So move.
That would be my move.
Okay.
Motion.
Reform, excuse me. Health and Human Services reform is where it's going.
Okay.
Any other discussions on that motion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion prevails.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, testifiers as well. Appreciate that so much. We have a couple announcements before we adjourn today. We will be meeting 15 minutes after session tomorrow, Thursday, in room 200. We will have a short presentation on public-private partnership. Plus, we are scheduled for nine bills to hear, so plan on a little bit of time there. So if anything else, otherwise, meeting is adjourned.